Please stand by. We're going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Today is October 11th, and this is the Land Use and Sustainability Committee meeting. This might be our last land use meeting. We might have one more in November. So today is our final land use meeting. It's been a pleasure and honor serving with all of you. And if we have one more, then that will be great, too. Okay. Tom, housekeeping items. Do you want to tell us if anything's been deferred or withdrawn?
There's nothing that has been announced or requested for withdrawal or deferral with regard to item number 4, which is the FPNL Storm Underground Program discussion. The representatives of FPNL could not be at today's meeting. They requested that the item be deferred to November 1. They said that they would be available at the November 1 meeting.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
If the administration piece, I don't know what's going to happen after November, and I think this is an important item to keep alive. I'm happy just to keep the item alive, to put my name as a co-sponsor, and then if a new commissioner comes along and wants to take it over, I'm
wonderful.
Happy.
And I believe Commissioner Dominguez may want to join you as co-sponsor of that as well. The FPNL item,
yeah.
Item number 4.
Okay,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to put on the record that when I was told they couldn't make it, I asked to get the data, that they would send the data that are requested, and I've been told that they did not send it.
Yeah. So what's going on here, folks, for those paying attention, the two sponsors of this item, myself and Commissioner Minor, myself, I'm going to term out in a month, and Commissioner Minor will be, depending on the outcome of the mayor's race, may or may not be here. So what happens is, people with who really don't put the community's interest first, they just play the clock out. They think we're not going to be here. But thank you, colleagues, Commissioner Fernandez, Commissioner Dominguez, for taking this on and yeah. not being, trapped into this calendar game that a lot of people play, with deferrals and let's wait to hear it and, trying to forum shop commissioners. So this will be heard, whether it's this land use committee or a future land use committee. This is not going to go away. Take it for whatever it's worth. They're not here today. They didn't provide the data we had asked. They clearly have it. They've got endless resources to gather that, and they didn't provide it. So clearly, in my opinion, what's happening here is they're just hoping this goes away. They've been unwilling at first to even, entertain this, and then clearly when they saw that we weren't going to walk away and that there's significant community support for this item, they've been giving us a bit of lip service, in my opinion, but we'll see where this goes. Okay. I'm happy to take things out of order. If I don't see really anybody from the public here. We have staff here. Anybody want to have a request for an item to be heard out of order? Otherwise, I'll go sequentially.
I have to step out at 4:25, before leaving today's meeting, I'd love to have a discussion regarding the technical amendment having to do with air conditioners.
So that's number 6. Let's hear number 6. I don't know much about this. I saw this was your item, so I'm curious to learn more. Would you like to tee it up? This is about a local technical amendment, I know nothing about this, regarding the Florida Building Code that has to do with requirements for existing buildings in new construction to provide air conditioning in the entire building rather than merely providing ventilation as required by the Florida Building Code. Commissioner Fernandez?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, the Florida Building Code does not have a requirement for the provision of air conditioning in buildings. There's a requirement for heating. There's a requirement for ventilation, which equates to open windows. But there's no real requirement or anything that we can enforce for air conditioning. And of course, given this wave of extreme heat warnings we all experienced this summer and the extensive
amount of period that our area was under these heat warnings. I think it's something prudent for us to look into, not just for new construction, but as individuals come forward to update their properties, having some sort of requirement that if they reach a certain benchmark in renovation and work, then now you go away from having window units or no AC at all in certain areas to actually provide air conditioning. I know, Eric, you've been looking into this issue, and Mr. Attorney, you have as well. So I don't know if you all want to add anything else into the record about this.
Commissioner, thank you for the opportunity. And we have Anna Salguero, our building official. Just a couple of items that we wanted to touch on. I think that the administration believes that most properties, if not all, new construction properties are availing themselves of air conditioning.
Right.
So it really comes down to the universe of significant renovations mm-hmm. or 40-year recertifications. Mm-hmm. We feel that incorporating air conditioning into existing buildings as part of a 40-year recertification is probably a bit much, maybe a bridge too far. And we'd rather not conflate those two issues at this time. Sure. We do believe that if someone is going to go through a substantial renovation so that everything could be brought up to code, that it makes sense that they would incorporate air conditioning into the building. But I know that our building director actually had a conversation with her counterparts at the county. And they had mentioned something that they had tried something similar to this in the past and had gotten some resistance from the state. I don't know if you would like to hear any of that. It's anecdotal information, but it may be helpful.
I don't want to hear it, but I'll hear it.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I don't know if I'm tall we can't enough hear for you. This microphone.
Is it on?
Okay.
No. It's on. Okay. I'm just too short. Sorry. So good afternoon, commissioners. I reached out to the county. This is the group that oversees and provides any of the technical amendments. They're the ones that would be supporting them when we go to the state. So I talked to them about this, about the ability of a technical amendment. They felt that there would be resistance because generally when there is a technical amendment, and this is their opinion based on what they do, that the technical amendments will be allowed when it's specific to an issue in the area, and that, for example, Miami Beach is not different from City of Miami or from unincorporated Dade as to the heat and the number of buildings that may not have air conditioning. So they felt that the technical amendment would not be well received because of this, because it is not something that's an acute Miami Beach only issue. They recommended different pathways, one pathway being with modification to the code, which the new code is coming out already in December, but so December 31st, the 2023 code comes out, and then almost immediately they start working on the next code cycle. So it would be trying to put in an amendment into the next code cycle through the energy portion of the code. And the other issue that they brought up was Florida statute 533.900, and it was 001, 2, 3, 4, which have to do with energy code, and that you have to then comply with energy code in a certain way, and it mentioned existing buildings, and that's been where they've met with the resistance when they've tried to go with the air conditioning, because I was speaking with the county's energy expert and their expert on mechanical systems, and in addition to the director of that group, and so they felt that going with trying to do a modification to the state code would be beneficial or might be an avenue. And the other avenue they felt could be an avenue is through Florida statutes and doing some sort of getting a Senate or House to sponsor a bill because of the way that the bills currently read, it really does limit you from doing this. So the way that portion of 553 is written, it says that this is the state energy code, and so it kind of applies to the entire state of Florida. So what you want to do is do a modification to that portion to allow for local amendments, and that might be a way. And the other thing that they recommended was perhaps trying to dangle a carrot and having some sort of incentivizing for people to update their air conditioners. And those were their – that was like – I had a meeting with them this morning. I had sent them some stuff earlier, but – so they were researching everything, yeah. And then we had a meeting this morning. I wanted to make sure to be here as prepared as possible.
I appreciate that, Anna. So I'll tell you where we're coming at. You go throughout our city and you see buildings that still have – what do you call those windows that
Jalison,
yes, windows. Clearly not conducive in our environment, especially in the middle of summer. It's hot and there's humidity. You also see a lot of buildings that still have wall units that break and that they're also not efficient. And the bigger issue is that you have air conditioning in one room, but you really are not ventilating the entire space. You're not ventilating the living room, the other spaces, I think it's important for us to get guidance from our staff as to if it's either through an incentive, or whether it's through significant renovations. Or whether it's through the 40-year recertification, which I understand is a least preferred path, but somehow we need to get to a point where we phase out these window boxes and we provide, you know, air conditioning where people live when we're experiencing these extreme weather, extreme heat advisories in the area. So I just like some thought from you all. Maybe we can get creative in our approach, especially in terms of incentivizing this. But I do think the change in our weather has caused this anomaly, and we need to address it because it's just unbearable for people a lot of times. And it's usually the poorer people of our community.
Are there any state or federal programs to help buy or retrofit older buildings that lack air conditioning?
I can look into it. I didn't find anything in my short.
Let me ask this. I mean, is it possible to do an inventory?
Yeah.
Of buildings here that you could do it just by year, right? Anything before 1950 or 55 would possibly not have central AC, and
yeah.
Then of those, you survey them to see which don't, and then, you know, to what extent could this be a city-sponsored initiative to either through incentives or just outright purchasing, window ACs and things for some of these buildings.
And the window AC doesn't require a permit generally. But I believe what the my understanding was that the goal here was to go for something that's a little more permanent than just a window AC. And when I spoke with the county specifically, they mentioned the smaller units that are now being used. Words are leaving me.
It's getting late in the day.
But those smaller units that come in, one of the deficiencies that the energy consultant from the county said was that they don't take in outside air. So sometimes when you add in those kinds of units, because even the little wall shaker, window shaker, does have some outside air that it's ventilating through. But those other units, the way they're designed, they're really not bringing in a fresh air intake. So sometimes if you do, when you update, if you don't do it properly, you actually end up adding moisture to the space and not getting the space to properly vent, and you may end up having mold issues that you didn't have before because of this. And that was something he brought up with those, that is different from a central AC, because the central AC will bring in outside air and has certain number of air exchanges. So I think it's worth exploring. I did look into, I didn't think of what you asked for. I did look into how many mechanical permits we had issued last year. And so in the period from last, and it's about 10% of our permits are mechanical permits. And so I was going to further look at those. I just ran out of time to see how many are total building retrofits, which are bigger units, and how many are little individual where the homeowner is or the unit owner is putting in their own wall.
Commissioner Fernandez, one thing, you know, you might want to think about would be, to the extent, you know, you want to give direction to maybe just inventory to see how many multifamily dwelling buildings, you know, might not have central AC, and then we can further survey them to see, how many just lack, you know, any AC capacity. And then we could possibly entertain, you know, incentives for those building owners to retrofit their buildings, because installing central AC in those buildings, it could be cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. However, with some of the new tools that we've gotten from Tallahassee, maybe we want to look at, hey, in exchange for going in and retrofitting your building and making it more resilient and blah, 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 maybe we could give you additional FAR or something else to help offset those costs. That might be a way to tackle this problem.
Thank you. Anna, what about a new construction? Is there a state requirement to have AC for new construction?
There is no state requirement for AC in new construction. I just have not seen any projects that have come through for new construction that have not had an AC in them, just because, I mean, we all go from our air-conditioned car to our air-conditioned homes to our air-conditioned jobs. There's very little, you know, outside open
so
air.
So can we make that a requirement?
Again, that would have to be with a local technical amendment, and the county felt like they had tried it and that it wasn't well received, and that's why they mentioned changing something in the building code and or changing something in the Florida Energy Code. I think concern with the energy code on that was that if somebody wanted to do one of those houses that has a whole house ventilation system and wanted to, like, I want to live like in a very open home, that they would be resistant to something like this, and then they would fight this because of that law. Like, I know that there's places in California, but it's different because their temperature in Northern California is a little bit less hot than here, where there aren't air conditioners in the hallways of buildings, and buildings are built without air conditioner. Here, because of the heat, most of our buildings are built, like, we don't have, I haven't seen anything in the past, I don't know, 20 years that I've seen come through without having an air conditioner in it in one way or another.
Yeah, and what about the windows? Are jalousie windows still permitted in the state of Florida?
So jalousie windows in new construction, they don't have, there's no product approval. So you can get a window that's a projection window that opens in that same way, but because of the impact requirements and the pressure requirements, the jalousie windows are not something that's in the code.
So what about in a 40-year recertification? Can we do a local technical amendment to say that in a 40-year recertification, we don't want those windows? The windows have to be changed, or is that already done?
That's not already done. So what the 40-year recertification, the intent, and it, I like to call it now the existing building recertification because of all the changes, but the existing building recertification, the intent of it is to make sure that something, when it was built to code. So it does not necessarily mean that you have to update everything and make it to current code. It just needs to have been built to code and maintained and be in good condition. So if you had a lot of times what will happen is they'll the electrical system specifically, older electrical systems could be cloth wire. And if well maintained, a cloth wire can be in good condition. However, it's very difficult for cloth wire over the years not to degrade to the point where it becomes dangerous. So because of this, most cloth wires have been removed and added. Most of the buildings that are part of the recertification that are required to recertify will, because of insurance, a lot of times will update their windows to impact windows because of the insurance requirements more than that it's mandated within the building recertification. So there is no mandate to update the windows, but the buildings will do it based on the insurance, because the insurance carriers have started to raise the insurance for all those buildings that don't have some sort of impact system in their windows that aren't all either shuttered or all impact resistant in one way or another.
So that there's no requirement to have impact windows for a 40-year recertification?
No.
Interesting.
And I think, through the chair, I mean, I think that you know, to itself creates part of the problem. We are in an environment that is no longer conducive to those types of windows. But let me ask you, Anna, a question. Do we currently have a mechanism to enforce air conditioning braking? We have people living in units with these window units, or living in apartments, even if they have central AC. Do we right now have a mechanism to enforce lack of AC, especially when we have these extreme heat warnings?
I don't have a mechanism. I don't even have staff that I would be able to suddenly have staffing to cover.
No, I got that. No, but by mechanism, I mean jurisdiction. We don't have any ways of enforcement. So we could have, you know, people living in apartments. Even they rented an apartment with AC. The AC breaks in the middle of summer, but there's nothing we can do as a government to make sure that they have air conditioning now available.
Correct. The county had also told me that they tried to add it to Chapter 17 of the county code, which has to do with like minimum housing standards, and that was met with some resistance also. So they had tried to do it as in the minimum housing standard requirements, which is different from the building code, and that was also a challenge. So
I
don't have a way of enforcing.
Well, but that was at the county, and I think sometimes, you know, the county may see resistance, you know, and act cautiously on it, but I think we still sometimes do need to act.
No.
And I would like for us to explore a few things. I think one of the things we most certainly should explore is, you know, establishing something somehow where we know there is air conditioning, whether it be by wall units or some sort, but there is air conditioning. It's impossible for anyone to live in our environment without it. But the issue is when it breaks and people living in conditions without air conditioning for extended period of times, especially during summer. I don't want to get in the middle of recertifications, and I don't want to get in the middle of requiring it when you get to a certain threshold and that type of stuff, because we do want to encourage people to fix up their properties. And I have a feeling if someone is doing an improvement to their property that's 50% of the value of the property, we don't need to say to put in air conditioning, because it probably will. It's just a market demand. But what I do think we need to do is protect those people once they're renting a unit, that the AC breaks in summer and they're left now living in a place that's like an oven for an extended period of time. And especially it happens especially worse when they're living in units where they may have AC, but it's one little box in a bedroom that's supposed to ventilate, you know, 500 or 700 square feet. And then you're left, you know, in hot conditions in a kitchen, in a living room, in other places. Mr. Attorney, is there an avenue for us to achieve that goal?
The challenge with your last suggestion is that this year the legislature preempted us on the rights of rights and obligations of landlords and tenants. Mm-hmm. So I think if you did want to try to address this as a legislative matter, the local technical amendment is
the right course,
an option. I think if you were to do that, it sounds like from the administration, it might be better to tie it to a substantial renovation of a building rather than a recertification, because what I understand from the building official is a recertification is more about, is the building compliant with the code when it was built, where a substantial renovation, I mean, if you're undertaking major capital improvements to a building, that maybe it could be required as part of that. I'm not familiar with the history of the county's attempts to do this, so I would want to research that, but that is certainly an option that you have legally. The only thing I'll
but
say
I
about
see,
that...
But I see two separate things here, and I'm sorry to interrupt. One thing is to provide AC, mm-hmm. but then another thing is to provide central AC. And that's where I see, you know, probably that's more the requirement or would be more of, okay, part of a 40-year recertification or once you're doing renovations and that type of stuff. But I think there just needs to be a minimum standard that whether it's a window unit or central AC, people living in Miami Beach need air conditioning in order to survive, functioning air conditioning. And I think we need to have a way to enforce that because slumlords do exist, and they do exist in our city, and we've seen them. People that just don't maintain their properties. And it's not just older buildings. It might be even renovated buildings that are split up into condominiums, and you have one unit owner that, you know, rents out their unit, and they don't maintain the window unit, and they don't care. And now someone that is of little means, you know, is left living there in those conditions, and they got to come now talk to our, legal guidance that we provide them and all that. So I just want us to figure out how we can have a local way of enforcing that when summer comes around. And I don't know if the local technical amendment is the right way, because my issue is even this should apply across the board, whether someone's a tenant or not. Mm-hmm. And that should get us around that preemption that the state did on landlord-tenant matters. And we get that that's totally a state thing. This is just a basic thing put aside from the landlord-tenant relationship.
We can research that, and I also would like to know what the county's experience was if they tried to do something like this as a housing standard, which I think is more what you're saying, is it doesn't matter whether it's a renter or an owner. The requirement should apply equally. So I'm happy to look at that.
Thank you.
Just one comment I would make is if we do proceed with the local technical amendment, under the state building code, we cannot discriminate between materials or products. So I think we should focus on, if you want to establish a minimum standard of air conditioning, a window unit or a wall unit or central AC, any of those things could satisfy it.
Yeah. I think we need to just go right now to the very bare minimum.
Okay.
I think ideally, eventually, it'd be great to make sure that we have central AC in these buildings. But I think at the very bare minimum, we just need to make sure that before next summer, there is a requirement for property owners to provide air conditioning in their property when they're inhabited, and for us to be able to have a way of enforcement
okay.
of that.
maintenance is done as far as property maintenance, like a light bulb going out or things like that, are enforced through our code enforcement. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of, I don't know, throw that extra, throw an extra confusion into the mix.
And it might be good still to do that inventory so that we can look at long-term other things like retrofitting and when buildings come up for 40-year recertifications or where they're doing their significant renovations to eventually see what long-term policies we can create to get central AC or better equipment.
And the reason I am definitely not a huge proponent of adding it to the building recertification is currently the requirement is that they get a structural engineer for the structural components and that they get an electrical engineer for the electrical components. Neither one of them is going to want to look at the mechanical components, so now you're bringing in a third engineer into this. And so I think it can become overwhelming to the buildings that are just trying to deal with minimum life safety of a possible electrical fire or a possible structural failure. And so that's why, in my estimation, putting it onto the building recertification is not a good idea because of really the burden there is a burden of minimum life safety and security in your home. And while I get that it's uncomfortable and you may have to and it may be hot, it's generally not in a condition where to the level of people being more than uncomfortable and being able to turn on fans and do something else to take care of it or put in some sort of side units. And so it would also bring in a third engineer into something that becomes expensive. So that's kind of my feeling on that one, but I just want to end on that. Thank you.
So what do you want to do with this?
I think we should continue this. I certainly want Nick to look at the technical amendment for something that can be locally enforced, just general, without saying what type of air condition, but saying that you know air conditioning is required in dwelling units in our city, something that we can hopefully get in place before next summer.
As a voting member, I will move your request to continue it and to get the additional information that you've just enumerated.
And Commissioner, would you also like to see an inventory of
yes.
existing buildings and what incentives are out there?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I need to step out, but over the past 2 years, I've had the pleasure of serving along the two of you on this committee, and I just want to thank you all for the amount of time and service you give to our city. We know that you sacrifice from your personal responsibilities to be here and from your families, and it's not easy. But as your colleague on this committee, thank you for your time and for your dedication to the residents and taxpayers of the city of Miami Beach.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank
Fernandez.
You.
The feeling is mutual. You have a couple of items here, Commissioner Fernandez. Are you going to be gone for the rest of the afternoon?
I need to be at a meeting in 6 minutes.
Okay.
But I don't think I'll be back because I think you intend to end by what time?
Well, I mean, we don't have a lot of items, so probably won't go a full 3 hours today. So do you want us to hear your items or you want to just open
up to the will of the body? If you all have time to consider them, that's good. I trust your judgment.
Okay. I know.
All right, thank you.
Number three is an update. We'll do number three, but I think number two, you're going to want to weigh in because this has to do with the rehabilitation of historic buildings and item.
The last one,
I imagine you want a briefing on that. So I'm going to defer seven with your permission and two. With your permission?
Yeah. And Laura, and I think Laura is almost like, if she were the sponsor of three.
So seven, Commissioner, these will be deferred to the first meeting in January?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I guess number two as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So two
and three. Seven.
And seven
yeah.
and six. Two, six, and seven.
And what about three? Is
well, three. We're just going to listen because I think we're all interested in hearing an update about the Baywalk. So
Great. We can
do number three. And I'm sorry, number six. Well, we just discussed number six.
Yeah, and that the sponsor asked that it come back, so we'll defer that to January.
I think so. That gives Anna time to do her research. Good enough?
Okay.
Well, then, let's do item three, although, Commissioner Dominguez, your item number five, if there's someone here that we can just take care of it now and send you home or back to work, we could do number five now. David, are you here for five?
No, I'm here for three.
With number five. Okay. Well, can we do number three and then send you home or wherever you got to go? Let's do number three. This is an update. We discussed this at our last land use meeting. I don't know if you can hear me, which is just an update on our Baywalk.
Correct. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. David Martinez, CIP for the record. At the last meeting, the item was continued in order to continue the discussion, I believe, regarding the Baywalk, the existing Baywalk constructed at the Southgate apartments. Since then, I have received notification from the property owners that in fact, their upper management is considering the impacts of the potential early opening as they look at it of the Baywalk. They're concerned with unintended costs associated with the maintenance and operation security issues. And really the bottom line is what they stated to me was that they are not ready to commit to open the Baywalk early, but they hope to continue their dialogue is what they had stated to me as it relates to the Southgate. Just to remind the committee, the Design Review Board order from years past required them to open the Baywalk upon certain things happening. One of them was the construction of the South Bay condominiums to the south, construction of a sidewalk on 10th Street, on the south side of 10th Street. And also, the DRB order discussed the reimbursement of certain monies associated with the construction of a glass wall on the west side of their property. The other thing that the DRB order required was that they record an easement, which my understanding it has not, and the easement was to be recorded once the South Bay Tower to the south recorded their easement, which did occur some years ago. So that's kind of where we stand today on this particular section of the Baywalk.
Comments for David?
I have a question. Can park rangers, are they allowed to be part of the Baywalk? I know that crime was one of the concerns of the South Gate.
It's private property.
So, I mean, it's a challenging discussion because we do have park rangers in many of our parks, don't have them in all of our parks. And then in addition to that, the concept of are we going to deploy park rangers onto private property, I think once we had a contiguous Baywalk, there might be some benefit to doing that. I worry about having, you know, park rangers assigned to a singular property, especially if it's private and it hasn't been conveyed as an easement.
I wasn't thinking of a singular property, but a segment. So, David, you were saying that the Baywalk could be open behind South Gate, and the rules had said that if the two buildings on either side were open, then South Gate had agreed to do it. Multiple buildings. It's not far from Canopy Park. And can that be part of their route? They go behind the Bentley Bay, walk behind South Bay, Floridian, all the South Gate, and then come back to the park?
Certainly, we can assign the park rangers to do pretty much any reasonable route. It's just a question of resources and are they being as effective as possible, or are we going to need additional resources to be able to accomplish that? That's
understood.
Really,
I just wanted to make sure that if needed, that could be part of the route in the future. So if crime is the Southgate's concern, one of their concerns, we can let them know that we can work with the city administration to have park rangers on there periodically once the items are open. And I know we spoke briefly about the north end of the Baywalk, and I think you had good news. You've hired some consultants. They're evaluating it now. I've met with two condo board presidents down on that end as well, so I'm really looking forward to getting some progress.
Thank you.
Okay. David, anything else? Okay. Okay. Thanks, David.
All right. Very well. Okay. Thank you.
So we'll show this discussed, and you want to continue this to the January meeting for additional updates? Okay.
Great. Thanks, David. Thank you. Okay. What do we have? Number five. Commissioner Dominguez, this is your item. Regarding potential incentives for residential development, which would include both the retention of existing residential uses and conversion of transient establishments, which would include hotels and suite hotels and the like, to long-term residential use.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we've gone over this a few times the last few months and trying to come up with ideas. And I sat with Tom recently, and the city administration came up with some options. And Tom, if you'll go over them, that would be great.
Sure, happy to. What we had discussed with the item sponsor was sending a recommendation to the city commission to refer an LDR amendment to the planning board. And it would create regulations to incentivize the following. The first would be the conversion of existing transient uses in the West Avenue overlay. Currently, transient uses such as hotels are prohibited in the West Avenue overlay. And it would be an incentive to convert those to residential. The second would be the conversion to or development of residential, non-transient residential uses on Collins Avenue in the area between roughly 47th Street to 63rd Street. This is RM3 zoned. It is currently primarily residential uses, but hotels are allowed as a permitted use. The other area that could be explored is up to 71st Street along the ocean. And then the last would be the conversion to or development of residential non-transient, again, in the RPS4 area along Ocean Drive from 1st to 5th Street. Currently, there still are a couple of hotels in that area. There was an ordinance that was approved for the conversion of the Stanton, but that particular ordinance that allowed for an FAR increase was limited to that property. And so if there's consensus, this could be sent to the full commission for the referral of an ordinance to the planning board.
So what do you guys think of some of those items? Is that something that we can submit to the full commission?
So the question is, are we going to, we would just make a referral to the planning board to consider these items, or would we give them a list of things of our recommendations, or how would that work?
I think our thought, and Commissioner Dominguez, correct me if I'm wrong, is that we would develop an ordinance to bring to the commission to refer to the planning board. If it's referred to the planning board would then provide a recommendation to the commission, and it would have to be approved on two readings by a 5/7 vote of the city commission.
And then the recommendations that you would come up with would, if we send this back to the commission, the recommendations would be considered by the commission before it's sent to the planning board?
I believe so, yes.
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
Which meeting can it come?
I think it would be very difficult for us to get an ordinance put together before the December meeting, because the October commission meeting is next Wednesday, and we've already printed for that. And then October 25th is a presentation meeting. And so to develop these into an ordinance, we probably would need to do that, bring that to you in December.
Okay.
So is that what you'd like to do?
I mean, you could always just refer something, ask the commission to refer something conceptually, and then we could develop it before it gets to the planning board. So that's another option if you wanted to get something on the October 18th or October 25th, but that would basically just be a referral and direction to the administration and the city attorney's office to develop an ordinance to bring to the planning board.
Yeah, if you want to move it, I think you would put in the item the broad concepts, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so I think if you want to keep it moving, Commissioner, we can move it. If you want to move that item, I'll second it, and then let staff come up with top-level items for discussion, and then they can work on it before it goes to the planning board, and you could probably have that for the 18th, do you think?
Yeah, it would have to
or
be
the 25th?
It would have to be in an addendum, but we could probably put a quick memo together with these broad concepts. It would just be a consent referral to the planning board. And so if it's referred, then we would develop it for the planning board.
Yeah. Well, it's been moved and seconded.
I'm good with it. I like this item. I think, these, short-term rentals, apartment hotels, what have you, are have been bad for our city in the aggregate. So to the extent that we can decrease supply of them, would be a good thing for our city. And if we have to create incentives to do so, I think it's worthwhile. I think, net positive, getting rid of, the short-term rentals and the apartment hotels will be good, because I just think that, the budget traveler that comes here and, just wants to have a good time on our streets and create havoc are attracted by the low rates that some of these hotels and properties have to offer. So to the extent that we can, decrease the supply, I think that's a good thing. Okay, we'll conclude that item.
We'll bring a C4 referral to the next commission.
Will dovetail a little bit potentially to my item, the last item on the agenda, which is item number one. And I'll hand this off to you, Tom. We've talked about it extensively. And I've paid, great compliments to you and your team, and particularly Rogelio, for putting together what I think is a really insightful, well-thought-out set of recommendations and ideas for our consideration. This item is potentially increasing allowable floor area ratio for workforce housing. This item was sponsored by me before the Live Local Act and before, Tallahassee had indicated that they're looking to continue to preempt us on a lot of local zoning authority, most recently with respect to FAR, taking away voters' rights to directly vote on FAR and putting it back in the hands of commissioners. So this was even before all of that. To really address the chronic housing shortage and housing affordability that we have in our city, particularly for workforce housing. We have plenty of luxury and ultra-luxury housing. We don't have enough for people who have to work every day for a living, provide local services, raise families here, et cetera. And, Tom, if you want to kind of maybe just at a high level summarize some of your thoughts and observations, that might be good. But this might tie into some of the work that Commissioner Dominguez is thinking about. What would those incentives be to change short-term housing into something else? Maybe we sweeten the pot if they're going to change it to workforce housing. And are you prepared to give us a high-level summary of some of your ideas here?
Sure. We went over this, as the committee may recall, at the last meeting. And just to refresh everybody's memory, what the proposed ordinance does is it establishes very defined areas within South Beach and North Beach for FAR increases for workforce and affordable housing. And the areas that have been identified are areas of the city that are in close proximity to transit and what we believe would be future transit zones. And at the last meeting, we discussed a broader area. One of the things that the committee asked us to do was to look at narrowing those areas, and that's what we did. We basically removed the Flamingo Park area from the proposal, We removed Lincoln Road frontage properties from the proposal, and we removed the Convention Center properties from the proposal. And within the South Beach area, the area would be limited now to basically the Fifth Street area, going from 4th Street to 6th Street, the commercial district along Alton Road from 4th Street to Collins Canal, and then 17th Street until about Meridian Avenue. We left in the North Beach area because that was limited, and we also added as a potential future study area the 41st Street corridor. In addition to the FAR incentives, there also is a provision to allow the DRB or the HPB to approve up to a 14-foot increase in height to accommodate any increase in FAR that might be proposed. And we've also made some recommendations with regard to how parking could be addressed, minimum parking requirements, and that would be either one, to remove the minimum parking requirements altogether. People could still provide parking, and it would not be an FAR penalty if they wanted to, but there wouldn't be a minimum requirement. Another option would be to create a warrant process for the reduction in parking where the City Commission could look at these on a case-by-case basis. So those were the primary changes that we had proposed to the ordinance, and we're certainly open to any recommendations of this committee.
You know, again, I'm sunsetting in a month. You know, I think it behooves us to be proactive in this area, particularly thinking about workforce housing, where we want to have it, and what the additional FAR bonuses might be for workforce housing. Tallahassee, my thought is they're gonna do some more preemption come this next legislative session. I think we might as well try to get ahead of it. I won't be around to vote on any of this, but you know, I want to get it out there and try to keep this alive so that we're not starting from scratch when and if we get hit by this. So this might be an item you want to sponsor, Commissioner Dominguez, and you know, keep it alive. Maybe you marry it with you know, an additional incentive that if you're going to take your short-term property offline and make it workforce housing, the city might be, you know, potentially generous to that property owner to do that. You know, just an idea.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm happy to keep this alive and continue to work on it. When it comes to parking, I worry about reducing the minimums, particularly in certain areas, and would look at case-by-case basis, but I'm very supportive of this. It's going in the right direction, and we need to do something in order to keep things affordable and have workforce housing in our city.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm very supportive as well, and Tom, the map, I appreciate you updating. After we spoke, I did have a couple other questions on the map, and that is, it looks like the area, Fifth Street on the Bay, is also included, but that right now is a condo area, so I'm not really sure why. And also the area on both sides of Alton at Fifth, extending into Sixth Street, right? One is a parking garage and a Publix, and the other is a new condo project going up, so I don't think those are going to be in it. It may cause questions from people wondering if we're going to change that parking garage, so I would recommend that we change those. And then I don't know if you want to leave the park. It also includes Canopy Park, but there are some buildings around there, so, and a parking lot, so if the health center doesn't happen, then so. But I would recommend that we take those areas out because they're condominiums, and that would be the only other change, Tom, I would make. And then I don't know, what does this stay in the committee then, or does it go back, or what would be the action?
Well, I think one action, Commissioner Dominguez, if I heard you correctly, I'll substitute my name,
yeah.
And yep, you'll take over this. Maybe bring it back in January, subject to who's sitting on that land use committee meeting. But you can track it, and if you want to
call you,
well, call me anytime.
We won't have sunshine then.
Or send it, you know, to the full commission then for further discussion, saying that we've kicked this around now several times here in this committee, and to try to get input from some of the new commissioners and new mayor.
Okay.
And then get it to move. Yeah. Perfect.
Okay.
So we'll show this by acclamation, continue to the January 2024 meeting, and I'll identify Commissioner Dominguez as the new sponsor.
And then update the map to take those three little green boxes out.
Okay. So I think we are done for today.
Can I say something?
Please.
The past few months, it's been a pleasure to serve with both the chair, Commissioner Ruggieri Ola, and member here, Commissioner David Richardson. You guys have put in a lot of time. You love our city, and I wish you much success in your future endeavors. And let's keep in touch and continue to make Miami Beach beautiful. You both are residents, and I've really enjoyed getting to know you better.
Well, the feeling is mutual, and you know, if I can ever help you, you know how to track me down. So,
and thank you. Your words are kind, and we won't have sunshine, so we can come and lobby you as long as we're not being paid.
And Commissioner, Commissioner Arriola, just for the record, on item four, the FPNL, did you want to have that, since we have two new sponsors, moved to the January meeting?
Yeah.
All right. So for November, I guess there's nothing. So do you want to cancel the November one meeting?
Let's officially cancel the November meeting, and this will be my last land use meeting chairing it. So it's been a pleasure working with all of you guys. You guys, you know, uber professional. You care deeply about the city. You're, you know, incredible subject matter experts. I hope the residents understand, you know, how deeply you care about the city and how much you know about all the nuances and intricacies, and you know, you make us look good up here, because you know, you all do the work. So thank you. It's been an honor to chair this committee and serve with my colleagues and represent the city.
Thank you. I appreciate everything.